land claims was going on. In the meantime, their lifestyle was changing from a style of living off the land to an economic lifestyle. But there would be no jobs in the villages. Many of the natives, especially probably in our era, coming into the 40s and 50s and probably 60s for the beginning of it, we educated the natives out of the villages. Because when you go to high school and college and learn some type of trade or profession, you really cannot go back to your village to practice that. I'm one of the examples. I went to high school, I went to college, came out in accounting, and I live in Sitka because I work for the Public Health Service, Indian Health Service Hospital. Throughout this whole process, though, we really didn't all forget the languages or educated out of it. My dad, as I said, still became one of the main interpreters of his time. And we heard the phrase Lansu. And as we finished schools and returned, many of us became active in Lansu, which eventually became Lincoln Haida Settlement and Anska. At the last ANB&ANS convention held in Juneau last November, I was a keynote speaker for the convention. The theme was Alaska Native, the Permanent Resident. Much of my speech pointed out that there were two important ingredients to Alaska Native, the Permanent Resident. One is, of course, the people. You must do something to preserve the people. And the other is the land. With the land and the people taking care of the land and preserving it, you will always have the Alaska Native, the Permanent Resident. ...1991 poses a problem to both of these ingredients. One, the land was not given to the people. It was given to a profit corporation. And all we own are shares in that profit corporation, which could be sold. And the other is to the kids born after 1971 do not own shares unless they inherit some. I think we need to try to resolve both of these problems. Money and land have been awarded and given, but not yet to the people. ANSCA mandated that profit corporations will be organized. They were, but no real advice or technical assistance was given. The natives were put in a new and vicious world of the profit-making world and told to go out and make money. To the people are oriented to a non-profit situation, mainly the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood, and in an area of providing services. They were also fishermen. So the whole world of the profit corporation was not only a new world, it was foreign, and they really did not know how to handle that. So the profit corporations, not only the village corporations, but even many of the large regional profit corporations, show a long history of losses. That's one of the reasons why I say that money has been awarded and given, but not yet to the people. They have been awarded to the profit corporations and given to them, and those monies were used to pay off losses, and the people have not yet received it. But that's not our only problem. There are other problems that we could probably Well, I probably could elaborate a lot more on those others, but there are other problems. The turnover of people in Congress, the United States. There are many legislatures there now who were not involved in the Lanzu, as we call it. And they have a tendency to look at things differently. They know Alaska Natives gotten around $1 billion. They've read in the papers that the state of Alaska gives out permanent fund dividends, that the natives in Alaska own several large regional profit corporations and many, many village profit corporations. And many villages own timber, some have land, some are involved in commercial fisheries, so forth and so forth. Their attitude is to cut us off from federal programs, or at least cut back on quite a bit of the programs. They really do not realize that the people really don't own the land. They own shares in a corporation that owns the land. They do not really realize that most of the corporations have a history of operating at a loss, and the people have not yet really received any money. Some, like Shianika, and not even given the opportunity to try to operate. They have a history of, from the beginning of their land selection, of being sued not only by various environmentalists, but by the village of Angoon. And every attempt that they have ever made to operate has so far been stopped. So 12 years later, they haven't even gotten off the drawing board yet. And yet, they would be put in the same category by the people in Washington, D.C. in Lower 48 to say, you are an Alaska Native that received $1 billion. You own shares in a large regional profit corporation. You received 23,000 acres of land. And you have a village profit corporation. What more do you need? And yet, it's not just the people in Lower 48, there are people in Congress who believe that information. So our problem is not only with some of the things we have here. And the education that I'm talking about also does not stop with the congressmen. It also involves a lot of the young Alaskan Natives. The education facilities, like even in Sitka, and I consider Sitka to be one of the best ones. My kids go there, and I don't think I would like them to go very many other places. So I'm proud of the facility. But one of the things they don't do is teach the people about the Alaska Native land claims, so that not only the young Natives, but the non-Natives would understand what ANSCA is all about. Maybe they would get a better realization of the situation that the Alaska Native is in, that they really haven't yet received very much, because they also have the false impression of the kinds of things that we have received. The state does not even recognize us as a people, only as individuals. I know that some of our people don't even know what ASCA is. You gotta say Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act and all the whole thing to get them to know what it is. And even a thing like 1991 seems to be an item that is very common knowledge. And yet, in February, when I was in Juneau attending the AMB Executive Committee meeting, there was a lady that came up to me. She was an elderly lady. And she really means well, but it kind of points out the example, what I'm trying to point out as an example. She came up to me and she said, Franco, I said, you're on the AMB Executive Committee? I said, yes. She said, you guys are having a meeting? I said, yes. She said, we better do something about 1991. I said, it's really bad for our people. Then I said, well, what kind of thing do you think we ought to do? She said, I don't know. She said, all I know is everybody's against 1991, and you better do something about it. Right. And somebody kind of facetiously said, well, maybe we ought to skip 1991 and get right to 1992. But I guess the point is, you know, that these were people living right in Juneau, and Juneau's supposed to be the capital, and a lot of the information should be flowing back and forth there. And she's coming up to me, she's against 1991, but she doesn't really know what it is. You know, and so it's kind of left maybe up to the leadership to get some of these things. We really need to get back together as a people. The Lansu, as was stated, was approached, if we can remember by presentation in the A&B, they had a choice to do it in one Lansu or several of them. Their decision was to stick together and do it unitedly. And when you think about it, 1925 is almost 60 years ago since the statement was made, the land is yours, why don't you fight for it? It's almost a half a century since the Act of 1935. You know, and still, those people are still looking for the benefits of the Lansu, which we call Anska today. I think that the issues that we would face about the land and the people who are considered to be disinherited can be best approached again by a united statewide approach in much the same way that ANSCA was accomplished. Because those problems were really not created by the native people, they were created by legislation. First, the original people who presented the Lansu were not allowed to do it because they were not considered a government, and probably they came close to providing governmental functions more than any other organization that we have now, and that was the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood. So the first creation was born, Tlingit N'haina. And then it really took hold when it received a judgment. Then after ANSCA, you have all of the regional corporations, the village corporations, and then in 1975, the Indian Self-Determination Act that recreates tribal governments. All of the IRAs are considered tribal governments. So now you have, just in Sitka alone, you have the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood, you have Sitka Community Association, you have the Tlingit N'haida Local Council, you have Tsiatika, and all somehow was created because the Lansu was started. And all somehow have a little piece of it. And it's very difficult to come up with a solution when your pieces are governed by five or six different governing bodies. Somehow those pieces have to be put together, and the people, I think, have to make the decision. But the thing that kind of sticks out in my mind anyways is that ANSCA was an agreement between governments, the federal government and the Alaska Native governments. And we're trying real hard to live up to our end of the deal. And so far, in many areas, the United States has not lived up to their end. And I think that poses the real problems for the Alaska Natives. The others, I think, are problems that we could get together and try to resolve ourselves. But convincing the federal and state government, I think, poses a bigger problem.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Williams. Certainly appreciate your taking the trouble to come again this morning.
If there is any time during this day that you have any questions or any other ways that I could help provide information, I'd certainly be willing to try and provide as much as I can.
Well, thank you. I think that there are quite a few questions. If you are able to to deal with them now or later in the day, you might let me have your views on whether there should be any restrictions on the sale of shares in 1991. That's something that I've tried to get the people's views on. And everyone seems to agree in some form of restriction. A smaller number say, no, we should have the right to sell our shares in 1991. That's our right as Americans, that they're our property, and we should be able to dispose of our shares as we wish. It's a very difficult question, but if you...
Well, I'm not so sure whether addressing it as a sale of shares or not selling them is really kind of a solution. And I think one of the real problems of selling the shares, as far as I'm concerned, is that those shares own part of the land. If we could separate the land from the profit corporations and get it back to the people, so what the profit corporation owns then is a business, and it can create its business on the resources of the land of the tribe, so that when somebody buys shares in the corporation, they're buying just shares of a business operation, much like any other business, and so that the land is not part of that. Then I really don't have too much concern about the sale of the shares, because I think that the real concern I have is that we must somehow maintain the ownership of the land. The profit corporations, I think it's, you know, if we develop them in the right way and they become profitable and make it a kind of a thing that they want to hang on to, I think they'd be less likely to, they will be less likely to sell it. And if the land is not part of the deal, maybe it won't be quite so attractive to others. But I think the real thing that would make it attractive to others is the land. So I think separating the two is kind of the key to me.
Well, I certainly appreciate your the care with which you answered the question. That's an idea that I've run into everywhere I've been. Let's figure out some way of placing the land in the custody management of the village or the tribe.
See, part of the thing that I have presented in several places is that 1991 is really not a problem. What was a problem was we created in 1971, and we should have started to address it then. And that was that, you know, after a period of 20 years, the thing would be saleable, and the land was part of the corporation. And I think if we can resolve it in 85, I really wouldn't care whether 1991 came or not. You know, so I think those are kind of the key things that I think I have a problem with people really emphasizing 1991, because the history of our people is that they think they have a 1991 till 1991 to address the thing. And there's that tendency to wait. See, so I think that I've tried to stay away from really calling 1991 and address it basically as how do we solve the problem of maintaining the land. Because I'd rather look at 1991 to some of the positive things that will also occur. You know, the possibility of establishing additional stock, to provide additional capital to get into new ventures will also be there in 1991. And right now we have a tendency to look at the village corporations as operating only on its timber resources. You know, that seems to be our worst problem that we have. Anytime we run into problems, we either go back to cutting trees or cutting some more trees. And as a profit corporation, I think we ought to be trying to develop the corporation as though we didn't have any trees and really get into being a profit corporation. And part of that is looking for other capital and other businesses to get into, and how do we raise that capital to get into the business? Why should we always use the timber as a resource to do something? Because rather than just being a resource, sometimes it becomes a crutch. It's something that we always fall back on. So I believe strongly in trying to develop the corporation as though we didn't have the trees. And 1991 poses some of the solutions to that. Maybe we can create a different type of stock and have other people invest monies into getting into a new business venture and have the capital raised other and outside of our own resource that were given to us in the land claims.
If you were to succeed in your objective of separating the land from the corporations, and if the land were held by tribal entities, corporations could carry on business on tribal land but wouldn't own the land. I follow all that. Then you say in 1991 we'll be free to issue shares, new issues of shares from the Treasury, and we can raise money in that way. Just so there's no misunderstanding between us, you're speaking of the issuance of new shares out of the Treasury, additional shares, to non-natives.
Well, it's not only non-native, maybe it's other natives, but it's...
No restriction.
Yeah, but you know, it doesn't have to be part of the parent corporation. It could be a subsidiary operation. You know, maybe you want to get into an equipment sales and rental store or something, and you know, and we need a way to finance the thing. One of the ways to do that is to, you know, create a subsidiary organization that gets funded by other people becoming a shareholder in the thing.
One last question: that the history of limited entry is one that interests me, because it may reveal what is likely to happen in 1991. You see, you said if shareholders were earning dividends on their shares and the corporations were profitable, then in 1991 they'd hang on to their shares, they wouldn't sell them. Well,
I don't think it'd be all of them, but
no.
Less likely to.
Right. Well, the trouble is that it's only if your corporation's earning some money and paying dividends that you're likely to have a market for your shares. In other words,
I think that's the hidden thing in the thing. If we maintain this history of losses, the real value in the shares is the land that goes mm-hmm. with the shares. And what I was really going to say was, if we separate the land from the corporation, whether in profit making or non-profit making, you have taken some of its value away to the person that may eventually want to buy it.
Yeah, I see. Well, let me just ask you one question about limited entry. My impression is that that after limited entry came in, a lot of native people who, for one reason or another, may have needed the money or were persuaded that it was a good thing to sell their permits, in fact, went ahead and sold their permits, and that's resulted in a real diminution in the number of native people engaged in fishing on this coast. Is that your impression? Is that what happened?
Well, I've heard that a lot of them sold them, but I think a lot of them got left out almost initially, because they picked 2 years, and I don't know who was responsible for picking those 2 years as the main criteria for eligibility. One of the examples we had, like Leo Houston Sr., who has been a fisherman for 40 years, commercial fisherman out of Huna, happened to be sick in those two magic years. And no matter how much he wrote up about all of his experience of 40 years and so forth as a commercial fisherman, didn't count, because the magic years were those 2 years. Another example is a guy who happened to be in his military service those 2 years. And even that didn't count.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people missed out initially. They also picked on people like myself who happened to be working for Indian Health Service, have been a commercial fisherman almost on and off most of our life, and that's how I went to college as a fisherman. That's where I grew up. Been working in a web house since I was about 12 years old with my dad, and a hand troller probably since I was 8 or 9 years old. I couldn't qualify. Mainly, it wasn't because I wasn't fishing, and it wasn't because I wasn't out there in it. It's because my main source of income didn't come from fisheries, because I worked for Indian Health Service. But you know, there's always that feeling that, well, once I finish with Indian Health Service, I might want to go back to Huna, and maybe I'd like to go back into fishing. But unless I have $50,000 to $60,000 for the permit, maybe another $100,000 for the boat, and about another $20,000 for the gear, be very difficult to get back into it.
Indian Health Service doesn't pay that kind of money, eh?
No.
Well, thank you, Mr. Williams. Thank you very much. I think I'm supposed to go over to the senior citizens, so I think we'd better adjourn till 2 o'clock now.
Yeah, this room has a lot of friction because it goes right back to him when he talks, you know.
Well, I mean, that is true, too, is that there are those of those families, folks who are disposed of them. But I think that the heritage is something that shouldn't be overlooked, you know, and just flagrantly disposed of.
Ma'am, you wish to say something, I think.
I was going to say that
scares quite a bit of the older people that when we pick the land over, when the government turns the land over to the native claims, that we lose all our American citizen rights. That's pretty scary. Well, what is your opinion about it?
Oh no, you don't lose your American citizenship rights. Citizenship is something that you're born with and that stays with you until you die, unless you renounce it. Got nothing to do with land claims or property or anything else.
That's all I got. That's scared a lot of people. We're scared. We lose most of our American rights.
Well, that's unfortunate, as that was said. I wonder, is there anyone else who'd like to say something here?
What are some of the advantages or disadvantages of not selling?
Well, the advantage to selling is that and this is just a view expressed by some people who come to our hearings. They've said, well, if I have a share in, let us say, Sea Alaska or Sciatica Corporation, then in 1991, I will be able to go to a broker or to a stock broker, a place where they buy stocks, and I can say, I've got 100 shares in Sea Alaska, how much will you give me for them? And then you will get whatever they're willing to pay.
$100,000?
I don't know. did you say $100,000?
$100,000?
Well, I certainly am not making any promises like that. But
On the other hand, if the majority of shareholders in Sea Alaska give up their shares, then whoever buys those shares, and it would very likely be an outside corporation or a group of non-native people, they would then own Sea Alaska, and they'd own all Sea Alaska's assets and all Sea Alaska's assets. The same would be with Sciatica, so that native people who want to sell their shares would get some money for their shares. I don't know how much. It might be very little. It might be a lot of money. But on the other hand, if a majority of them did sell their shares, then there'd be no native land left. The native people would be people without land. So those are the advantages and disadvantages. And I'm going around to see how native people feel about it. And it's a pretty important subject.
It is, because you can see it right now that money, I say money talks. Parents have received their children, some of the money that their children are supposed to have had in the beginning. Where is it now? It's gone. Instead of leaving it in the bank or putting it in trust, it has been spent. And so they have nothing. So in the end result, if some outside corporation takes it, the children will have nothing.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I was wondering, you say in 1991 we'll be able to sell our land if we want to. Could they just sell, like, say, 0.5% of it or 0.25% of it, or does it have to be all of it?
Well, you as individual native persons can sell the land. Only the corporations can sell it, and they can sell it today if they want to. And for the most part, they haven't sold it. But if in 1991 a majority of native people sell their shares in the corporations, then they will no longer own the corporations, and they'll no longer own all the land that the corporations have. That's the problem.
They are going to have a vote on it. And they're not just going to up and sell it without letting us know or asking us?
Well, you see, what can happen is this, that in 1991, some outsider could come in and visit the shareholders of Sciatica privately, one by one, buy the shares one by one, and then go to the annual meeting of the corporation and say, I now have 51% of the shares, and I now control this corporation. So that's the way this kind of thing can work.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Mr. Matthews, I think you wanted to add something.
Never mind. You answered the question there.
Also, if they get, say they sold 51%, they would still have to pay tax on the remaining.
Well,
the corporation. The native corporation.
But regardless, who
sure.
The corporation is still not the president.
Yeah, I know, but
they're
you
the
see, they...
Oh, yes.
That's what they don't think about.
Anybody else wanted to say something?
I think that's all. I'm going to.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I own shares in Wolf, and I'd like to...
What do you mean?
John Roberts.
And what I've talked to a lot of younger shareholders, and most comments I get about it is that they're just holding on to pieces of paper that feel like worth nothing right now. And to wait that long without getting, you know, like yearly, you know, payments or anything else, like for having the shares, feel like they just want to give it up at the time 1991 comes, or holding on to it for so long and not get much of anything from the dividends or whatever you want to call it. And I've heard a lot of people just say that they, as soon as that day comes, they're going to just run and sell it. But so I listen to a lot of different people talk about it, but it just seems like a lot of people, I've heard a lot of people myself, especially younger people, say that they'd like to just give it up then and there for waiting so long. I mean, they probably wouldn't feel the same if they were getting yearly or monthly or something like that and not having to wait 2 or 3 years and get a dividend or something like that from them or whatever.
You can't leave without giving us your name, man. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, that's pretty much the...
Well, we're, just for the record, Mr. Roberts, we're here at the Senior Citizen Center in Civica, and you're not a senior citizen as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I'm the driver for the seniors.
Okay.
I'm the driver from
the... How old are you, if you mind telling me?
I'm 27.
Okay, thank you.
Well, as I understand it, this is the first time that the See, Alaska has showed any profit there, and profit of $4 million. I think they grossed $32 million, and with a deficit of $28 million. So, beginning to show they're getting their head above water in relation to See, Alaska. So it's quite possible that it may get the ball rolling here. So, the time 1991 rolled around, maybe paying dividends.
And then you think Mr. Roberts' young friends would perhaps hang on to their shares instead of trying to sell them?
Quite possible. Yeah, it's
six
years away.
I think it's
best
to hang on to the land.
That's
how long
is
it going to last if we sell our share of it? My name is Mabel Dietrichson.
And you think people should hang on to their land?
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
In your opinion, are the corporations doing anything to educate the people on the advantages and disadvantages of selling or not selling?
Well, one of the complaints that we have everywhere we go, especially in the villages, is that people say we never hear from our corporations and they never come out here, they never tell us what's happening. I mean, that's a complaint. I'm not saying that's true, but that's what people are telling me. And so on that basis, a lot of them say they're not coming out here to educate us about what it means to be a shareholder and about 1991. But on the other hand, we've had some of the corporation presidents testify at our hearings. Mr. Malott, the president of Sea Alaska, has done so. And he and others have said they're trying to educate the shareholders. It isn't easy. They have a lot of shareholders, and I guess they're busy trying to make money, and they don't get to the villages as often as they would wish.
Okay.
Did we get your name, ma'am?
Yes, he did.
Oh, thank you.
The young lady did. I'm not from Sydney. I'm from Juneau.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, anything else anyone wants to say, and then I'll get out of your way here, and you can go back to enjoying yourselves. So.
I'd like to ask you a question.
Yes.
Is that related to this?
Right.
Since we started getting money from Sea Alaska, I've known a lot of families that have cashed their children's checks. A lot of white people that had no right to it have taken their children's money.
You mean the dividend checks?
They had no right to it. There should have been some kind of protection for the children, because they'll never see it again. Are they able to sue?
Well, that's a question that I'd like to consider, and I'll ask the case with the legal advisor for our commission.
I've known of people that get a divorce, the mother takes the children, and the husband keeps getting the money. And I thought there should be some kind of protection for the children, because it's their right to have it.
Well, it's a good point. Well, anybody else?
Could something like that be a person of trust in relation to the juveniles or children that are underage?
Well, that's exactly the kind of idea that I'm glad you raised, and I'll consider that, and I'll be pleased to include it in my report, if it appears to be an idea that the lawyers advise we can carry on with. And I can tell you that when my report comes out next year, I will send a copy to you here at the Senior Citizens Center. And let me thank you all then for your contribution and to our discussion. And I apologize again for interrupting your lunch, but it was a pleasure to meet you all, and you'll be hearing from us in the future. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Well, we'll start again this afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and there are two persons who've filed written submissions, and I think they should be read into the record. The first is from H.E. Hayes, Sitka, Alaska, 99835. It is addressed to me and says, my comments are for the record of the Alaskan Native Review Commission hearing at Sitka. Married to a Tlingit, Ellen Hope, and with over 30 years in land management, I have an objective point of view that may be of interest. A summary of my conclusions concerning Anxa and Nilka follows. The settlement aspect in the form of corporate business structures was a serious mistake as written. This is an old world, essentially European cultural concept, not suited to Alaskan Native traditions, and has forced them into a sink or swim situation they were ill-equipped for. The Claims Act should be modified to remove the sink or swim aspect and provide for a transition mechanism over time. The transition mechanism would include federally financed management and occupational training, including university level, and financial subsidies to be phased out over time, similar to those enjoyed by agricultural subsidies and the Chrysler Corporation. Provision should be made to guarantee inalienable ownership of the land by natives that can be passed on to future generations. The ongoing legal dispute initiated by the Sierra Club against She Attica on Admiralty Island is a ludicrous situation. By no means should Congress stand by and witness without action the machinations being perpetrated in every possible way to deny She Attica the exercise of its land claim rights. The Alaska Congressional delegation is seriously delinquent in this case. In addition to provision that these tactics be made null and void, the shareholder should be reimbursed by the federal government for all costs that have resulted from these attacks on their rights guaranteed by the settlement. The 1991 provision should be modified to prevent possible takeover of corporations by others. I believe if the corporate concept is retained, that a new form of concept is needed to guarantee inalienability while providing for the sale or transfer of shares to natives or non-natives. Land ownership should remain native. The 1991 provision, in fact, should be stricken or delayed until the Claims Act can be suitably reformed based on the proven defects. As presently constituted, the settlement has no guaranteed permanence, nor have the intended benefits been fully delivered. This concludes my major comments. And the record should show that that is the submission of H.E. Hayes, read by me into the record. There is another submission in writing that it has been asked should be made part of the record. It is from Vesta L. Dominix. It reads as follows. My name is Vesta L. Dominix, D-O-M-I-N-I-C-K-S. I belong to the Cake Corporation and the Sea Alaska Corporation. My testimony is as follows. What was the intent of our elders in giving up something that is, quote, extremely valuable, unquote? What did they foresee in exchange? Dollars? Perhaps. Perhaps their foresight was to eventually cease dependence on the government, Bureau of Indian Affairs, Public Health Service, be competitive in the job market for, quote, top jobs, unquote. be competitive in the business world. How did they foresee accomplishing these things? Proxy, board members, corporation, marketing, to name a few, was suddenly added to our vocabulary. What I'm getting at is, to be a successful board member, it is absolutely essential to learn and understand the business of a corporation, corporate structure, laws, marketing, to name a few. As a board member, you are not advising, you are making many decisions on running businesses, on educating shareholders and corporate matters. My concern is that the board members and future board members are educating themselves on many matters. That is, should be educating themselves on many matters. What was the intent of our elders in giving up our land, knowledge of and implications of ANCSA? What have we given up? What is there to gain? The many aspects of knowing and understanding about corporation functions, laws, etc. In order to intelligently, successfully participate in decision-making matters, be knowledgeable in all aspects of businesses your corporation is currently involved in addition to taking a course on corporate functions, laws, etc. As new board members get information and inform themselves on successes and failures of present businesses and learn from the mistakes. Was the foresight of our elders for all to succeed in learning about businesses in this business world, no longer depending exclusively on subsistence, on government services, but be involved in our own successful businesses, not only by owning a worthy stock certificate, also by being models for our younger generation in encouraging and motivating them to set high standards and goals and be competitive in this business world? Perhaps this was the foresight of our elders. The question remains, therefore, are we all knowledgeable of our elders' intent? Knowledgeable of ANCSA and its implications? Knowledgeable of corporation structures, laws, and so on? Knowledgeable of businesses our corporation is currently involved in? Are we taking the means, education-wise, to be involved in our corporation? Is this not self-determination? Last but not least, what are we doing about educating our young people about our new way of life? Not saying that we have given up our culture and heritage to accept this new way of life to some of us. And with a concluding exhortation in the Tlingit script, it is signed Vesta L. Dominix, May 17th, 1984, and the record should show that that is the evidence of Vesta L. Dominix read by me.
Couple more. My name is Andrew Hope. I'm speaking on my own behalf. I serve, as I stated earlier last night, as a board member of Shiatika Inc., Urban Native Corporation, and I serve as executive director of the Sitka Tribe, the Sitka Community Association. A couple of exhibits that I wanted to present were the Sierra Club Alaska report, a recent copy from April of this year. The lead story is called, entitled Cube Cove, Last Stand for the Tlingit Indians on Admiralty Island, a personal account. It doesn't say who the person is that gives the account, but it's kind of sensationalized interpretation of the efforts to develop Shiatika Inc.'s interests on North Admiralty Island. And then there's a detailed analysis from the Sierra Club Legal Defense Fund dated April 27th of this year, comments on the environmental impact statement and the tactics that they are taking to delay the developments that we're undertaking in Cube Cove. And they're encouraging their membership to to present the views outlined in these comments to the Army Corps of Engineers.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make some general recommendations. The major recommendations are relating to the 1985 study, which I have a copy of. I'm sure you will be receiving a copy. We just got ours yesterday. It's an advanced copy dated May 1st of this year. It's a 1985 report that the Bureau of Indian Affairs contracted Management Concepts Education Services Group in Falls Church, Virginia to conduct. And it's to be completed by, I believe, June 15th of this year. It seems to me a very well thought out, well researched, well written report. I think the parts that I looked at with the most interest were the financial evaluation analyses that were prepared by Mr. John Ferris, who is a CPA who works out of Seattle. He does much work with various Native corporations and has since the startup of the various Native corporations in Alaska. A couple of the major points that he makes that I think bear serious consideration are the handicaps that all of the Native corporations had to deal with. The first one that I think is very obvious is the undercapitalization for the startup operations of the corporations. The village corporations and the regional corporations were financed at from the Alaska Native Fund over a period of, I believe, 7-8 years from 1972 on, at a total of $6,500 a shareholder, approximately. And if they would have got if they would have received this amount of capital in one lump, right at the beginning of the incorporation, at the date of incorporation, that would have been fine, except that money was not sufficient to begin with, and then what compounded that that factor was the inflation, and it's more than 30%. Because the funding was advanced over a period of years, approximately 8 years, from the Alaska Native Fund and from the state of Alaska, from the royalties, oil royalties. So it diminished the purchasing power of that money by, like I say, more than 30%. The other interesting point that the data that I would like to point out is a 10-year track record of regional corporation performance, and it works out to be an average of minus 35 cents a share for the 10-year period of 72 to 82 for the 12 regional corporations. I think that
I mean that's the loss averaged out over all.
Yeah, for everybody. I think there's only about three really successful regional corporations in that 10-year period. One of them is the most successful is Cook Inlet, and as of 1982, the other two that were kind of fairly successful were Otten and Doyon. Doyon has since reversed that performance with their performance this year. We presented testimony to the Presidential Commission on Indian Reservation Economies in Anchorage last Thursday, and one of the main recommendations that we made is that they attempt to coordinate at least the information gathering that they are undertaking with you folks and with the proposed Sheffield whatever he's going to call his task force, a sovereignty task force, a state-tribal relations task force, a rural affairs task force. I don't know what it's going to be called, but they've been talking about it for months now, but nothing has been forthcoming as far as appointments or a meeting schedule or anything from the governor's office. But I think it's really important that the 1985 effort by the Bureau in Interior, your effort, the Presidential Commission effort, and any state effort go from a similar database, because it wouldn't be cost effective to reinvent a database on each of these efforts, because you're essentially covering many of the same topics.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, we presented a detailed statement in response to Secretary Clark's media comments on May 1st, as reported in the May 1st edition of the Anchorage Daily News, his comments relating to tribal government in Alaska and trust responsibility in Alaska and sovereignty in Alaska. And I'd like to enter this into the record. I don't want to read it, though.
All right.
Save your transcriber some time, because it's 12 pages.
Yeah.
Essentially, he stated that ANCSA pretty much terminated the trust responsibility to Alaska Natives and I think the questions that were presented to him were presented to him in an oversimplified manner, black and white situation, and he responded in kind, and our theme in that presentation was it's extremely important to be as specific as possible when you're talking about legal issues as complicated as these are, as they relate to tribal government in Alaska. And ANCSA did not affect the status of tribal government in any way whatsoever. Didn't even address tribal government.
Well, I appreciate your letting the commission have the response that SCA made to Secretary Clark's remarks. I read the account in the Anchorage News and the Anchorage Times of his remarks, and I wondered whether the UTA, of which you, I think, were one of the founders,
mm-hmm.
has made a formal response to what Secretary Clark said.
Well, the problem is Willie's out getting ready to move out to camp, you know, for the summer. So we haven't, ETA really hasn't received any funding to carry on administrative activities yet. We have a proposal pending with the Grotto Foundation and one with the Bureau of Indian Affairs that we haven't received from. And until then, it's kind of hard for UTA to respond to these day-to-day type issues as they come up. UTA hasn't responded, not yet. As far as I know, we're the only ones that have made any type of formal response. The Presidential Commission's hearings were very poorly organized. There was no advance work done. The contacts, the invitations for people, the requests for people to testify didn't even go out until Thursday of, less than a week before they actually had the hearings. So It's kind of hard for people to prepare a testimony, let alone even get there with that kind of notice. So I think there's going to be a group that will include UTA that will prepare a more detailed response with more case law citations, more statutory citations, and a group that will present the same group of people that have pending tribal constitution amendments and tribal constitution ratification pending with Interior in the BIA central office. Within a month, I think there will be a delegation going back there to try to see if they can get the central office to move on these constitutions once and for all. And if that doesn't work, then some other strategy will be pursued.
One of the propositions that keeps coming up in the hearings that I'm holding, and in fact, Mr. Williams made such a suggestion this morning, was that the corporations would assign the land they hold to tribal entities and thus avoid all the problems of 1991,
mm-hmm.
transferability of shares, taxation of land, and indeed would bring the children born since 1971 into participation, since they are by right of birth tribal members. According to the accounts I read of Secretary Clark's statement, he said that he would not accept into trust the any lands assigned by Native corporations in Alaska. If he were to, if that indeed is what he said,
mm-hmm.
and if he were to persist in that, it would present a barrier, at least in the first instance, to transferring corporate lands to tribal entities. But it raises a subject. I'd like your views on it in
mm-hmm.
two respects. One is, it's clear that when the ANCSA was going through, Native leaders in Alaska were either persuaded or had decided for themselves that they didn't want the land they were to receive under ANCSA to be held by IRA councils or traditional councils.
Mm-hmm.
And the view was that that would make the Indians of Alaska reservation Indians, and that had a very bad connotation.
Mm-hmm.
It would also mean that they would be very much under the thumb of the BIA, wouldn't be able to do anything at all without BIA approval, and